The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Lots of activity here at Ed Stone over the weekend. We had our beautiful graduation ceremony last night, 9 p.m. for us, so that we could hook up live to the ceremony in Edmond, which was at 3 p.m. in the afternoon. An exciting event, no glitches, no hang-ups or anything with the technology, just a beautiful ceremony on both ends. And everyone's probably a little bit tired today after celebrating last evening over another momentous graduation for God's church, for God's college, our 17th graduation ceremony going back to 2003, the first one that we had. So if we have time later on in the show, we'll have more to say about that. Also, later on in this segment, I want to talk some about the interview that William Barr gave on Friday. It's been all over the news, really. That's the only drawback, I guess, to doing the program first thing Friday morning, Oklahoma time, is that the big news that unfolds in the States on Friday, the daytime portion of the day, we can't get around to until Monday. But that said, I think this this interview with Fox News was significant enough, even if some of you Americans maybe heard it on the news or saw clips of it through the weekend. I think it would be significant enough to just play some clips from the Attorney General's exchange with the Fox News reporter. So we'll get to that coming up here in just a bit. Well, last week, toward the end of last week, we talked about the big shakeup coming here in the UK, Theresa May being on the way out. And then over the weekend, we see these headlines of this stunning election in Australia. And once again, the talking heads and the exit polls, they all got it wrong. The right-wing coalition won. And everyone said it was not going to happen. It's really remarkable. We've seen this play out before, haven't we? There were no polls over the past many months saying that the right-wing coalition would win. Richard put together some material here saying that News Poll, one major polling agency in Australia, put the coalition behind in 56 consecutive polls since 2016. This is going back 18 months. 56 consecutive polls. There's no way it's going to happen. There was one betting agency even that was so confident that they paid out early. Well, they got it wrong. Spectacularly so. President Trump called Scott Morrison and congratulated him on his victory yesterday. He, not surprisingly, Mr. Trump compared Mr. Morrison's victory to his own win in 2016 and also to the Brexit vote that same year. But the right wing won. And when you look at what the left wing, the Labor Party, was running on, here they built up this platform on climate change, and you can see why it was so well received in the media. They loved it. Well, surely they're going to win because they're finally going to do something dramatic about climate change. Here's what the Washington Post said. Opinion polls and betting markets predict Australia's Labor Party, this is before the election, under the leadership of 52-year-old former union head Bill Shorten, will handily defeat. It's just an easy, this is the way they thought about Hillary Clinton, remember? Oh, it just should be an easy cakewalk. Handily defeat the Liberal National Party coalition that has governed the country for 5.5 tumultuous years. So the media, they don't like these last 5 years or so. So finally, change was coming. It says the Labour Party wants Australia to generate half its electricity from solar, wind, and other renewable sources by 2030, a huge shift for a nation with the world's fourth largest coal reserves and the eighth biggest natural gas industry. They were running on Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez's platform, their version of the Green New Deal. And then the media just hopefully reporting this is a done deal. The Post wrote that if Labour won, that it, quote, could provide a morale shot for U.S. Democrats and other left-of-center parties around the world, including the British Labour Party. Well, this is going to change the momentum. It didn't happen. The New York Times, its headline was, it was supposed to be Australia's climate change election. What happened? How could we lose? Well, Bloomberg reported that all the polling agencies, they just followed each other. They can't seem to learn the lesson. It's happened before. It'll happen again. But they were all so confident, these polling agencies, they were so confident with their predictions. The American Spectator, it says, so once again, the obvious question is, what happened? Combined with the epic fails associated with Brexit and Trump's 2016 presidential victory, both of which seriously damaged the credibility of the pollsters, this leaves no way to escape the reality that something is seriously amiss among the experts. Why do the experts keep getting this wrong? It says, getting it wrong is beginning to become a habit with pollsters. Even worse, they seem to always err in the same ideological direction. How about that? How come they never make the mistake in the other direction, in the direction of a conservative government? How come the polls never get it all wrong when the liberals win? Well, this one election analyst, Kevin Bonham, he told SBS News about these suspicious polls. He said it's like one poll can be 3% out, and that's what you would sort of expect now and then by random chance. But all the polls being out by that amount in the same direction and getting all the same results is something that absolutely cannot happen by random chance. Something suspicious is going on here, in other words. The Spectator had this to say, just to continue the same article I quoted a moment ago. It says, the possibility that the Australian election would produce a victory for the Liberal National Coalition was missed by the pollsters and the Western media for the same reason they never imagined Trump would win. They don't understand that given a choice between expensive utopian schemes and creating an economy that will permit them to provide for their families, most people, including Aussies, will vote for the latter. They don't understand this. They don't grasp this. They're so far to the left. The commentators, the pollsters, they go out and they draw up the poll. They draw up the question the way that it will ensure the result they want. Truth fails. It says there's a message. There's a message here for the Democrats. That's speaking of the U.S. If they will listen, if they don't, they will regret it next year on Election Day. So that's the American Spectator saying that for these radical leftists that are now coming forward to run for president, to run against Donald Trump, you wonder if they'll be listening. You wonder if they'll be looking at these results like down in Australia, or if they'll consider what happened in 2016 with Brexit or with the U.S. presidential election. Of course, we know, as my father has said before, that there is a clear change of direction and that God is behind it, particularly for the United States, but I think you see it also for Britain. and now Australia as well. A clear change. When you think about, just to use the example of the U.S., again, 8 years under a radical leftist, Barack Obama. As my father has said, the radical left was just on the march, virtually unchecked. No one stood in opposition. Or if they did, they didn't win. They all caved in to the pressure. And as my father has said, Mr. Trump has proven himself willing to stand up to it, to take a stand against this radical movement. He said in the Saving America article, May of 2018, when you compare what this president is doing to what his predecessor did, there has been a clear change in direction, one that will slow the speed at which America is being pulled apart. It's not going to stop it, but it is slowing the speed. And that does give God's work. It does give God's church. It gives God's college just a little bit more time and hopefully resources to get the job done, to finish the work. But just think for a moment about this change in direction, how dramatic and sharp this change has been in just the course of 2 years, even more recently. Just look at how quickly things changed once the Mueller report came out. That was back in April, I guess it was. Byron York, he said in his recent piece at the Washington Examiner, he said, from now on, the Trump-Russia affair, the investigation that dominated the first 2 years of Donald Trump's presidency, will be divided into two parts, before and after the release of the Mueller report. It says, before the special counsel's findings were made public last month, the president's adversaries were on the offensive. Now they're playing defense. It says further on in his piece, in the meantime, House Democrats have been reduced to stunts to try to grab the public's attention. At the Capitol recently, they enlisted Hollywood star John Cusack to take part in a public reading of the entire Mueller report. Did you get to see any of that this weekend? I don't think so. 12 hours it took. C-SPAN had the cameras rolling, and no one was listening. No one was watching. You contrast that with William Barr's interview on Fox News. Quite a bit different. I've pointed out this fascinating timeline. Going back to the change in direction. It was only in June of last year. We're not even a year removed from when William Barr sent that memo to Rod Rosenstein. Talking about how that Bob Mueller had, you know, as far as obstruction of justice is concerned, that he wasn't properly reading the law. That was in June, and then by the end of the year, December 7th, 2018, President Trump nominated Bill Barr to be the next Attorney General. And the the Democrats had already just recently used the nuclear option, just going ballistic over the Kavanaugh hearings. And so when the dust finally settled from that, then you have William Barr nominated, and really he got through without any trouble whatsoever. You wonder if the Democrats are wondering if they maybe tried to take out the wrong guy, if maybe they should have focused more of their energies on Mr. Barr instead of Mr. Kavanaugh. In any event, when the president nominated him, Andy McCarthy, one of the columnists that we refer to frequently on this program, he said that Bill Barr's going to restore order. Well, he had his confirmation hearing. That was on January 15th and 16th. And I just want to take you back. I know we've played one of these clips before, but I want to take you back to these clips from his confirmation hearing. This is William Barr on January the 15th, earlier this year. We'll start with clip 15.
We live in a time when the country is deeply divided. In the current environment, the American people have to know that there are places in the government where the rule of law, not politics, holds sway, and where they will be treated fairly based solely on the facts and the even-handed application of the law. The Department of Justice must be that place.
The Department of Justice must be, of all places, it must be the place that upholds the law. There is no room for political bias in the DOJ. And this is a time when we're deeply divided. But the rule of law has to hold sway. The rule of law has to be upheld. That's what he was saying on his way in. And then, as I've played for you before, he also brought out that, look, I've had this job before and I'm near retirement. I didn't come after this position, but if my country needs me, if the Department of Justice needs me to restore order to the department, then I'll happily do it. Clip 13.
I did not pursue this position, and when my name was first raised, I was reluctant to be considered and indeed proposed a number of alternative candidates. I'm 68 years old, partially retired, and nearing the end of a long legal career. My wife and I were looking forward to a peaceful and cherished time with our daughters and grandchildren, and I've had this job before. But ultimately, I agreed to serve because I believe strongly in public service. I revere the law. I love the Department of Justice and the dedicated professionals who serve there. And I believe that I can do a good job leading the department in these times.
And he was right about that. That's a pretty good self-assessment. He's been doing a pretty good job for these past few months. And why? Because he reveres the law. Now that's made him a lot of enemies, because there's a lot of lawless officials, high-ranking officials in Washington, D.C. And they're running for cover right now. Or they're pointing fingers at each other, blaming someone else for their own misdeeds. I revere the law. It's not often that you hear that coming from the Department of Justice. You should hear it all the time. He went on to say, this is one final clip from January 15th, clip 14.
As Attorney General, my allegiance will be to the rule of law, the Constitution, and the American people. This is how it should be. This is how it must be. And if you confirm me, this is how it will be.
Wow, that's great. This is how it will be. His allegiance is going to be to the rule of law and to the Constitution of the United States. He's there upholding the law. He went on to say that if confirmed, he would not permit partisan politics and personal interests to interfere with any investigation. And he came along and he let Mueller finish his. President Trump let Mueller finish the investigation into the Trump-Russia collusion, that false narrative. And now it's over. And now there's a clear change in direction with respect to investigations, because now the investigators are being investigated. Well, he was confirmed on, I think it was February the 14th, and then just a few weeks after that, the Mueller investigation ended. You know about Barr's four-page letter that the Democrats hated because he got out in front of them and he wouldn't let them establish the narrative. So he writes that four-page summary of the conclusions of the Mueller report. That's March 24th. And then there's that back and forth between Mueller and him, and Mueller didn't like the way the media was covering it, and Mr. Barr asked him, well, do you disagree with the letter? Do you disagree with my summary? Well, no, I don't. That's fine. But the media spin, that's what I'm troubled by. And it wasn't just Mueller. I'm sure it was Weissmann and all the others on his team. They were out to take Trump down. They were out to destroy the presidency. And there was no evidence They had 2 years, tens of millions of dollars, hundreds of witnesses, spying, informants, FISA court applications, four of them in the case of Carter Page. They were using all of these government agencies and resources, this tremendous power, and it didn't work for them. Mr. Barr comes out with the four-page letter, and then a few weeks after that, the full report is made public. It's there for anyone to see. If you're interested in the evidence, if you're interested in the facts, it's right there. And like Byron York says, they don't really have much to go on now. So they're trying to create a spectacle, like with the reading of the report for 12 hours. But it's not exactly captivating the nation. Instead, the Attorney General, he speaks on Fox News on Friday, and, well, that does get some attention. It gets some attention from both sides. Here's what he had to say. This is going back to Friday, the Attorney General's interview with Fox News, clip one.
Well, the first step is find out exactly what happened, and we're trying to get our arms around that, getting all the relevant information from the various agencies, and starting to talk to some of the people that have information. You know, the thing that's interesting about this is that this was handled at a very senior level of these departments. It wasn't handled in the ordinary way that investigations or counterintelligence activities are conducted. It was sort of an ad hoc small group, and most of these people are no longer with the FBI or the CIA or the other agencies involved.
Isn't that interesting? It was operated at the senior level of these agencies. Typically, it would be handled out in the field, a counterintelligence investigation, the Trump-Russia collusion investigation, but it was all the people in Washington, the top-level officials. This was an investigation taken care of directly by Jim Comey, Andy McCabe, Peter Strzok, John Brennan, James Clapper, Sally Yates, Susan Rice, Ben Rhodes, Loretta Lynch, Barack Obama. He's the one that spearheaded it. And now the Attorney General says, we're looking into this. It was handled in an unorthodox way. This was not ordinary. This went against protocol. These individuals weren't just running the departments or managing these agencies. They were running the investigation into Donald Trump because they all wanted to take him down. And they all thought sure that Hillary Clinton would win because, after all the exit polls said that. All the polling up to the election in November of 2016, they were sure. They were sure. The talking heads were in agreement. She's going to win. But they did have one little reservation. In case he didn't, or rather in case she didn't, they had to have, as Peter Strzok said, the insurance policy. Well, now the Mueller investigation is done, and the Democrats are not on offense. Now they're having to play defense. Here's what the Attorney General went on to say, clip two.
Why is it so hard to figure out?
Well, there are two things here. One, no one's really looked at it. I think there's a misconception out there that we know a lot about what happened. The fact of the matter is, Bob Mueller did not look at the government's activities. He was looking at whether or not the Trump campaign had conspired with the Russians. But he was not going back and looking at the counterintelligence program. And we have a number of investigations underway that touch upon it, the main one being the Office of Inspector General that's looking at the FISA warrants. But as far as I'm aware, no one has really looked across the whole waterfront.
No one's really looked into this, he said. They were just trying to go after the Trump administration. They weren't concerned about the investigators, who we now know are so biased, filled with hate, doing everything that they could to stop Donald Trump from winning the presidency. And Mueller never looked into it. he was going on for 2 years. And it just shows how that this witch hunt, from the beginning, it was meant to cover up the real crimes. And it did do that. It did it for 2 years. And it looked like it would be a lot longer. And then you go back to the timeline from last year. You see the appointment on December 7th, the confirmation January the 15th. This is a whirlwind of activity. And now we're seeing a clear change in direction. We certainly are. A clear change in direction with respect to investigations. Here comes the Attorney General, and if people at the FBI weren't listening to this, well, I'm sure they heard it over the weekend, because he's come in there, he's wanted some answers, and it turns out there's a lot more questions now. This is clip three.
Well, I thought when I came in from the outside that all the questions that I had and many other people had that would be readily answered once I got in, but I haven't found that to be the case.
That's a nice way of saying that he's met with a lot of resistance from the FBI. That's why I say Christopher Wray's probably listening. He's not getting the answers. There's people in the deep state stonewalling him. He's the Attorney General. He's the top law enforcement official in the United States. And here are all of these unelected bureaucrats. The ones at the very top, a lot of them are gone. But still, he can't get questions answered. Well, the reporter, speaking of Bill Barr and then the opposition research, what went into the Steele dossier, listen to what the Attorney General had to say about that, clip four.
It's a very unusual situation to have opposition research like that, especially one that on its face had a number of clear mistakes and a somewhat jejune analysis, and to use that to conduct counterintelligence against an American political campaign would be a strange development. I'm not sure what role it played, but that's something we have to look at.
They're looking into it. It's aimed at an American political campaign, opposition research, and look at how that document was used. Andy McCarthy had a great piece over the weekend about the dossier and how that it was presented to the FISA courts going back to late 2016 as if it was verified. He says here's what you need to know. In rushing out their assessment of Russia's interference in the 2016 election, Obama administration officials chose not to include the Steele dossier allegations that they had put in their verified application for warrants from the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court because, wait for it, the allegations weren't verified. It's interesting when you look at, again, all of the shenanigans going on between December 7th and January 20th or so, 2016 to 2017, that transition period, and then those meetings, Obama's intel officials on January the 5th, 2017, and then James Comey meeting with the president-elect the next day at Trump Tower. And then they tacked on a summary of the dossier to that intelligence assessment. And said that, well, it's not verified yet, but we know you need to know that this is out there. And then CNN and all the other news media, they took it and ran with it, BuzzFeed and such. So they told the president it's not verified. Comey testified later, it's not verified. And yet they kept in private, they kept telling the FISA court it is verified. They were lying. Earlier on, of course, they were having trouble getting some in the news media to run with it because it was unverified. And yet you look at what they did with that document and you look at the collusion between these top officials in the Obama administration and the media. There's a lot to look into here. He says, I don't know if it's there, but we're going to look into it. Listen to this next exchange between the reporter Bill Himmer and the Attorney General, clip five.
In the period of time between Election Day and the inauguration, did anyone in government or in intelligence, did they take action to justify their decisions?
Between Election Day, did you say?
Between Election Day of 2016 in November and Inauguration Day.
I think there were some very strange developments during that period. That's one of the things we want to look into.
Such as?
Such as the handling of the meeting on January 6th between the intelligence chiefs and the president and the leaking of information subsequent to that meeting.
That's quite a revelation there as well. He's talking about strange developments. If you remember, we've played the clip before of Congressman Peter King, where he talked about that 50 days or so of transition, this dark period in American intelligence that happened between, this was Peter King's words, he says between December 6th and January the 20th. This was a dark period in the history of American intelligence. And now you have a person in a power position talking about the strange developments in this period. December 2016, January 2017. Very strange indeed. You had the leftovers of an Antiochus administration trying to overthrow the government of the United States. My father's talked about this before in some of his messages, the significance of this this period, this 40-day period, specifically between December 7th and January the 16th. Some of the dates kind of overlapped a little bit with the transition to the inauguration. But God was intervening. It's not that the trouble stopped for the Trump administration. It would continue on for a couple more years. But the election certainly represented a clear change in direction. And then more recently, with the arrival of the Attorney General, the new one. And then finally, the Mueller report made public. A pretty clear change in direction. And now, all of these acts of treason, now they're being exposed. And you can see why. You can see why he's meeting so much resistance. Just a few more bits from this interview between Bill Hemmer of Fox News and Attorney General Barr, clip 6.
The president calls this a witch hunt. He calls it a hoax. Would you agree with that?
Well, as I've said, if you were the president, I think you would view it as a witch hunt and a hoax, because at the time he was saying he was innocent and that he was being falsely accused. And that's, if you're falsely accused, you would think that something was a witch hunt. I have to say, you know, when you step back and look at this, two and a half years of his administration, 3 years of Trump, you know, the campaign and then the first part of his administration, he has been hammered for something, you know, for allegedly conspiring with the Russians. And that, we now know, that was simply false.
Are you comfortable using those words? Witch hunt? Hoax?
I use what words I use, and it was an investigation, but I think if I had been falsely accused, I'd be comfortable saying it was a witch hunt.
So there you go. Had he been falsely accused and then been hammered for it for 2.5 years? This is normal, he's saying. This is a normal reaction. This is not obstruction. This is normal. There's no underlying crime. It's normal for a human being to say, look, this is a witch hunt. There's no there. There's no crime. And we now know that all of those charges are just simply false. It was a hoax. It was a witch hunt. It was a cover-up. Here's a little bit more, clip 7.
What she will say, and Democrats will say, is that you were spinning on behalf of the president with the principal conclusions that you released. They leveled charges that you held back the Mueller report for several weeks. Were you spinning for the White House to buy some time?
No, I wasn't. I think what they're really perhaps annoyed about is that they didn't have an opportunity to spin and that the fundamental findings of the report were out there for everybody to see, and they were not in a position to spin.
Bill Barr, the Attorney General, exposing more truth. They didn't have the opportunity to spin this their way. They didn't have the first opportunity to create the narrative. And so now the accusations, they're hurling them at the attorney general, saying that, well, he's doing, really, they're guilty of what they're accusing him of. Bill Hemmer then talks about Nancy Pelosi and some of her criticisms of late aimed at the attorney general, clip 8.
You are being heavily criticized by Democrats, by the House Speaker Nancy Pelosi. She believes you lied under oath. What do you think of that charge?
Well, I think it's a laughable charge, and I think it's largely being made to try to discredit me, partly because they may be concerned about the outcome of a review of what happened during the election.
What does that mean?
That means they may be trying to undermine my credibility, but obviously you can look at the face of my testimony and see on its face that there's nothing inaccurate about it.
The reason they're acting the way they are, as he says there, is they're concerned about the outcome of his review. They're concerned about what the inspector general might turn up. They're concerned about some of these leak investigations. There's multiple investigations going on. And so they're out there trying to undermine the credibility of the attorney general. They're out there saying he shouldn't be running the DOJ. Eric Holder, he's the former attorney general under Barack Obama. And he tweeted out this weekend, Attorney General Barr has deliberately misrepresented the Mueller report. He has started examinations of the conduct of Intel FBI personnel without a predicate for political reasons. He's protecting the president. This is the former AG who formerly described himself as Obama's wingman. And he's now accusing Bill Barr of protecting the president. He does not stand up for the good people he leads. He is not fit to lead the DOJ, says Eric Holder. He's not fit to lead. Others have said for not coming back for that second day of testimony. They've said he needs to be in jail and in prison. He needs to be arrested. Listen to his response with respect to an exchange he had with Nancy Pelosi last week, clip 9.
You reportedly had a conversation with her this week.
Yes.
What did you say to her?
Well, I wouldn't call it a conversation. It was more like an icebreaker. I was introduced and I asked her if she had brought her handcuffs with her.
So there you have it. Here's the new attorney general, a man of integrity who also has a good sense of humor. His enemies, however, are not laughing. This is very serious. I just read the tweet from Eric Holder. Listen to what one reporter said on Friday with respect to the grave danger that she sees in the new attorney general, clip 10.
I think Barr's the most dangerous person that works for Donald Trump because he has Donald Trump's worldview, Sean Hannity's worldview, but he oversees the Justice Department.
So we have...
I'll forget her name. She works at MSNBC. But all these attacks now, the character assassination, he should be in jail. He needs to be locked up. He's dangerous. He's not fit to run the DOJ. All that this shows is that he's on the right track. All that this shows is that he's getting close to the target. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send feedback to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Freedom is one of the most sought-after ideals in human history. Man's search for freedom has taken him into the fiercest of protests, struggles, revolutions, civil wars, even world wars. Today, in the midst of free societies, many continue to fight for what they perceive as ever greater freedoms. And yet, many of these same people are actively fighting against law. Few people understand that this war against law actually undermines true freedom. To learn more, request Gerald Flurry's booklet, No Freedom Without Law. In this free booklet, you will see what the Bible says about the latter-day spirit of rebellion and lawlessness that is now so common in our nations today. Also request America Under Attack. In this booklet, you will learn more about the spirit behind this attack on law. You'll see where this is leading. Both booklets are offered freely at no cost or obligation to you. Request No Freedom Without Law and America Under Attack. Email your request to td@kpcg.fm or visit thetrumpet.com. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Flurry.
Just one quick email following Friday's program, the Bible study that we had there at the second half of the show. Speaking of feedback, don't forget you can submit audio feedback if you go to the Trumpet Daily Radio Program page on the trumpet.com website. There's a big red button which you can hit to submit audio if you'd prefer to do that. If not, you can continue sending us emails, and hopefully we'll get to as many as we can on the air. But this one here says, absolutely found Friday's program riveting. It was so very informative, yet so thought-provoking. Events in the Middle East, the approaching trade war with China, and the immoral culture that has seized us here in America are truly signs of Christ's imminent return. It says also, it has made me realize how really shallow my own Bible study has been. Thank you and thank God for showing me how wrong I've been in my approach to this. That was in response to the study, as I say, on receiving counsel, going to God for counsel every day in our Bible study. She says, finally, may you all keep up the great work and keep fighting the good fight. Thank you. So as I say, if you'd like to submit feedback, don't forget to email us at td@kpcg.fm. A couple of clips here just as a follow-up to a couple of segments we did, it seems like it was a few weeks ago now, on Thomas Jefferson, our visit to Monticello, and just the way that history now is being revised or in some cases erased. There was an interesting exchange on Hugh Hewitt's radio show. This is with Pete Buttigieg. He's the mayor of somewhere in the Midwest. I forget where, but he's running for president, and he's pulling some pretty good numbers. He had a big forum last night on Fox News with Chris Wallace. He's getting some pretty good return. And here he is talking about renaming things that have the name Jefferson attached to it. Listen to clip 11.
The book. Well, let's go to policy now. Very blunt question, because you talk about going to every Jefferson Jackson dinner in Indiana when you're running statewide. Should Jefferson Jackson dinners be renamed everywhere because both were holders of slaves?
Yeah, we're doing that in Indiana. I think it's the right thing to do. You know, over time you develop and evolve on the things you choose to honor. And I think we know enough, especially Jackson. You know, you just look at what basically amounts to genocide that happened here. Jefferson's more problematic. You know, there's a lot to, of course, admire in his thinking and his philosophy. Then again, if you plunge into his writings, especially the notes on the state of Virginia, you know that he knew that slavery was wrong.
So that's the presidential candidate, Pete Buttigieg, saying that, well, definitely with Jackson, Andrew Jackson, we've got to rename things to someone else. Forget about the sixth president of the United States. And then with Jefferson, well, that's a little more problematic, but I guess we need to change the name there as well. Here's where we are. You go back to that press conference, that contentious press conference that Donald Trump had in 2017, August 2017, following the tragedy at Charlottesville. And that's what so many of his enemies point to. That's proof positive in their minds that he's a racist, that he was defending the KKK of all things. And yet you go through that transcript of that exchange with all the reporters, or listen to some of the clips as we've played before, and see what he has to say and see how much truth is there. He's exposing these people. If you remember the controversy that led up to that tragedy, it was over pulling down monuments. It was over removing monuments of Robert E. Lee or whoever else because, well, it doesn't fit with the racial sensitivities that we ought to have today. So just pull it down. Just destroy it. And listen to the references in this exchange. This is from August 2017. The references to, okay, you have Robert E. Lee, but then what about George Washington? What about Thomas Jefferson? This is clip 12.
Excuse me, I saw the same pictures as you did. You had people in that group that were there to protest the taking down of, to them, a very, very important statue and the renaming of a park from Robert E. Lee to another name. No, George Washington was a slave owner. Was George Washington a slave owner? So will George Washington now lose his status? Are we going to take down... Excuse me. Are we going to take down statues to George Washington? How about Thomas Jefferson? What do you think of Thomas Jefferson? You like him? Okay, good. Are we going to take down the statue? Because he was a major slave owner. Now, are we going to take down his statue? So you know what? It's fine. You're changing history. You're changing culture. And you had people, and I'm not talking about the neo-Nazis and the white nationalists, because they should be condemned totally. But you had many people in that group other than neo-Nazis and white nationalists, okay? And the press has treated them absolutely unfairly.
That's an exchange the president had with some of his friends in the media back in August of 2017. And what's interesting, it's not just what the president says there, it's interesting to hear what the reporters say. Well, George Washington and Robert E. Lee are not the same, they said. This is just almost 2 years ago. How George Washington was a slave owner. How about Thomas Jefferson? What do you think of Thomas Jefferson? And Jim Acosta says, I love Thomas Jefferson. I love him. But now you see we're 2 years on. And the thing of it is, the thing that exchange reveals is it reveals a president who knows the direction and where this is headed. And anyone, really, with some common sense and with a little bit of an awareness of history, ought to know as well. If it starts with this, where will it lead? And that's essentially what the president went on to say. Look, you heard him say, you're changing history. You're changing culture. Now, Buttigieg went on to say in the previous clip that, well, I don't think he should be erased out of history books, but we do need to change the names. We've got to stop honoring him. And so what does that mean with the Jefferson Monument, the Jefferson Memorial? Well, if first you change the names, then what about the monuments? And how much longer after that before you start erasing it from the history books? Erasing your own history. This is someone running for president, the president of the United States. No wonder they hate the current administration as much as they do. It's because of exchange, like you just heard. He's exposing truth. He showed clearly where this was leading just 2 years ago. And I can remember having programs even after that press conference where we showed, I think it was within weeks, because it then became part of the news cycle, then these commentators did start showing up on shows saying, well, actually, we should do away with those Jefferson and Washington monuments as well. Changing culture and changing history. When we come back, we'll conclude with a few comments about the graduation ceremony that we enjoyed just yesterday on the beautiful Edstone campus, together with our sister campus, our headquarters campus in Edmond, Oklahoma. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Are we living in the last days? Some dismiss the notion as fanatical.
But world leaders and news analysts are issuing warnings that are becoming more and more dire. Could Bible prophecies about the last days actually be accurate? Our brochure can help guide you through the relevant news and history and help you compare these events to what the Bible says. Are we living in the last days? This brochure is available for free right now at thetrumpet.com. Don't forget to visit our website at thetrumpet.com. Every day, thetrumpet.com will help you understand your world by analyzing today's headlines under the clear light of Bible prophecy. Log on to thetrumpet.com and sign up for our daily Trumpet Brief email and subscribe to The Trumpet Magazine. From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is The Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Flurry.
I think it was in a recent article by Joel Hilliker talking about graduation ceremonies going on at this time of year, something like 4.8 million students graduating from American universities in this very month, the month of May 2019. Millions and millions of students, seniors, senior graduates. Well, what we have on both of our campuses, it's very, very small comparatively. Yesterday, we graduated 24 sophomores and just 8 seniors. But it is the beginning. It's the mustard seed beginning of a new kind of education that's going to sweep across the earth in the wonderful world of tomorrow. The late Herbert W. Armstrong, as many of you know, he was a master educator. He was many other things as well, an accomplished writer, speaker. But he really did specialize in true education, and he learned early on in his life that education is not something you go out and get. He learned that true education is a way of life. It's a way of life, and this is something that I tried to remind our students of yesterday during the ceremony. It's easy to think about your education as being a 2 or 4 year period. In fact, it's a way of life. It's a lifelong process. It's something that we have to vigorously pursue after, leading up to college, all through college, and of course, even after college, when you commence with the rest of your life in service to God. Later on this week, I was filling in for my father on the commencement address yesterday. I think it was about 25 minutes, and we just had too many sound bites that piled up on today's program. But if not tomorrow, hopefully Wednesday or Thursday, we'll replay the commencement address from yesterday in its entirety. So if you missed that ceremony, I know it was streamed live on one of our websites, so some of you might have seen the ceremony last night or yesterday afternoon. But if you happen to miss it, you can be looking for the full audio of that commencement address coming up on this program later on this week. You're listening to Stephen Flurry, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send comments to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.